And the horse she rode in on. Now, this is something that I've been told that my grandfather used to say. I'm actually named after the guy. There's an understood part before this that is a four-letter expletive directed at you. Now, the thing is, this saying, and the horse you rode in on, this goes back to a time when people used to ride horses for practical reasons. Most anyone would have had a horse. Of course, today, this is something that's kind of a sport for rich people or people who have some leisure time or something like that. I've actually been looking into, where would I go to ride a horse? I don't own a horse or anything like that. I just want to ride one. I've gotten really interested in horses lately. And part of the reason is because I've been looking into Alexander the Great. And when we're looking at classical history, and part of the reason I love classical history so much is there are so many lessons built within it. When we look at modern history, it just seems like just a tool to use to divide people. But when I read the classics, I'm getting lessons out of this. And in looking at Alexander the Great, I've been especially intrigued by the special relationship that Alexander had with his horse, Bucephalus. Or if we look at the classical Greek, Bucephalus or even Vucephalus. I was talking to my Greek friend Anthony over at the diner, and I'm just going to go with the English version, right? It's a written test. So let's just call the horse Bucephalus, which means bull's head or ox head, depending on how you translate it. This always goes down to translation, doesn't it? I thought at first that must be because he had a big head or something like that. This was definitely a magnificent horse, or else Alexander wouldn't have seen the potential there. But really what it comes down to, when I did some further reading, Bucephalus had a brand on him, which was the head of a bull or an ox, and so that's where he got his name. So Bucephalus meaning ox head, bull's head. But anyway, quite a horse, but not everybody saw that right at first. Now, Arrian, the preeminent historian of Alexander the Great, a second century Roman author who was using sources that were much older than what he was using. This is actually believed to be the closest to Alexander the Great as far as a primary source. A lot of times when we're dealing with ancient history, what we call the primary source may have been written several hundred years after the fact, because it's just the best source that we have, the closest source to Alexander. But Arrian's works, the Anabasis of Alexander and the Indica, these are the greatest ancient authorities on Alexander. Now, I'll also refer to Plutarch's Lives of Noble Greeks and Romans, where, of course, Plutarch writes a parallel biography of Alexander the Great and Julius Caesar. But one of the things that really sticks out for me about Arrian's work is his overall appraisal of Alexander at the end of the Anabasis. And he writes of Alexander, "He was a man like no other man has ever been." When you hear somebody say that about somebody, you start listening, right? It's one of those things that, what is it that made Alexander a man like no other man has ever been? And I started reflecting on the idea that people rarely achieve high degrees of success alone. There is typically some mitigating factor, whether it is a platform, a person, something outside of themselves, an organization, sometimes just blind luck, but usually there's something or someone that comes in at a certain point. And the more I look in Alexander, the more I see the special role that this horse, Bucephalus, played in Alexander's success, and I want to explore that in this talk today. And I'm going to begin with Plutarch, because it's a beautiful story here about how Alexander first encountered Bucephalus, and I think that in this story we start to see the things that made Alexander great, the things that separated him from other people, the reason why we're talking about Alexander right now and not someone else. And so this is where Alexander first sees this magnificent horse, and this horse, of course, is an allegory for an opportunity as well. And that's what I love about how the classical Greeks and Romans wrote history. So let's go ahead and let's see how they met and the situation there. And then I'll talk a little bit about it. Philonicus the Thessalian brought the horse Bucephalus to Philip, Philip II being Alexander the Great's father, offering to sell him for 13 talents. But when they went down to the plain to try him, they found him vicious and quite unmanageable. He allowed no one to mount him, and paid no attention to the voice of any of Philip's attendants, rearing up against everyone. On this, Philip grew angry and bade them take the brute away as completely savage and intractable. But Alexander, who stood by, said, "What a horse they are ruining for lack of skill and tact to handle him." Philip at first made no reply, but when Alexander repeated the remark several times and seemed much distressed, he said, "Are you criticizing your elders? As though you knew more and were better able to manage a horse?" "This horse, anyway," he replied, "I could manage better than anyone has." "And if you do not," said Philip, "what will you pay for your rashness?" "By Zeus," answered Alexander, "I will pay the price of the horse." And you see here a character trait of Alexander, that he sees this opportunity that no one else saw. And in seeing this opportunity, Alexander is willing to take a risk. He's willing to go in a direction. He's willing to question the conventional wisdom of the elders. And he's willing to go his own way and do something that no one else is doing. I'm sure there's any number of horses that Alexander could have had, but Alexander saw something in this one. And this reminds me of something I've heard from Peter Thiel, the founder of PayPal, one of the first investors, I think the first outside investor in Facebook. And he always talks about going for monopoly, that you don't want to get into something that someone else has already shown that they're good at, something that other people are already doing. You want to do something that other people aren't doing. You want to have a monopoly in whatever field of endeavor that you are going into. And of course, when we think about this, when I say Peter Thiel, a lot of people don't know who I'm talking about. But if I say Elon Musk, a lot of people do. And Elon Musk didn't get to where he is by himself. Peter Thiel and Elon Musk were partners in the founding of PayPal. And so everyone who's successful, or nearly everyone, there's someone who is helping them get there. But when I look at Alexander here, he's willing to pay the price if he's wrong. And that's the thing, that there are so many times where we're unwilling to take a risk because we see that it's not working out when other people have tried it, or when we've tried it previously, and we think about what we might lose. Now, Alexander says, "I will pay the price of the horse." And we see here this is an original idea, that this choice represented independent thinking, that he's thinking differently from other people, and also he's showing self-confidence, all right? He's confident in his own ability, and he's got a realization that this could be a vehicle for success. And so when Alexander says, "I will pay the price of the horse if I'm wrong," he's not planning on being wrong. What he's doing is he's making a bet. And anytime we make a bet, what we're thinking about here is not just what we could lose, but what we could gain. Anytime we put our chips in, we double down, we go all in, we're thinking about what we can get back. And while Philip and other people are saying, "Hey, this horse is worthless, get him out of here, let's try something easier," Alexander is willing to try what is hard. Just like JFK talking about going to the moon at Rice University. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. All right. And so the thing is, Alexander's got a similar mentality, and everybody thinks this kid, this upstart, he's going to be wrong about this. Let's see what happens. At this there was laughter, and then a settling of the terms of the wager. But at once Alexander ran up to the horse, and taking him by his bridle, turned him around towards the sun, having, it seems, observed that he was worried by the sight of his shadow falling in front of him and dancing before his eyes. After thus calming the horse a little, He stroked him until he saw he was regaining his courage and spirit, and then gently dropped off his cloak, and with one leap securely mounted him. Then, with a light pressure of the reins on the bit, without a blow or a cut, he drew him in, and when he saw he was no longer frightened but only impatient for a gallop, he let him go, finally urging him on with a confident voice and a touch of the heel. Philip and his friends were at first silent with dread, but when he wheeled the horse around correctly and rode back to them proud and happy, they all broke into cheers. His father, it is said, shed tears of joy, and on his dismounting, kissed him and exclaimed, "O son, look for a kingdom equal to yourself, for Macedonia has not space for you." Look for a kingdom equal to yourself, for Macedonia has not space for you. That Philip, who had just thought that my son is impetuous, he's about to learn a lesson, now he says, "You're going to be better than me, Alexander." And certainly that's what Alexander did. Alexander saw not the risk of being wrong, but the reward of being right. And Bucephalus carried Alexander all the way to the Indus River Valley. Through all of Alexander's victories, even the long shot victory at Gaugamela, and this was Alexander's vehicle for success, because the whole reason that Alexander achieved these long shot victories was because he was on the battlefield himself, and he would see critical points on the battlefield, and he would know where it is that he had to be. He knew the critical point, that really the whole battle comes down not to what's going on the whole board. You know, it's kind of like chess, where you just have to take the king. That's what you're doing there. You're not trying to take all of your opponent's pieces. And Alexander understood this, that he knew that if I can be in the right place at the right time, if I can foresee the moment of impact, then I can win the battle, even if I'm outnumbered 5-1. And so these victories, these long shot victories that Alexander achieved, Alexander was never defeated in battle. And part of this was because he had a great horse. And so as far as that goes, when we think about ourselves, that Alexander not only had his horse, but he had his companion cavalry, and you will never get the success that Alexander got if you're not willing to take risks or to find that something or someone that will get you there. And that's the lesson that we can learn from Alexander the Great. And in studying Alexander, thinking about his ferocity. And when I say ferocity, when we think about someone who's ferocious, this is someone who is not so concerned about defending themselves and being risk averse as someone who is willing to charge in, someone who's willing to go forward, someone whose courage is greater than their fear. And so other generals, they would proceed according to plans. Alexander would alter those plans with the help of his horse, the vehicle that got him there, the vehicle that put him into the position to foresee these moments of impact and to take full advantage of them. And this was a very special relationship that Alexander and Bucephalus had. On one hand, Bucephalus refused all other riders. It wasn't just what Alexander saw that day. Even after Alexander broke Bucephalus, Bucephalus would never allow anyone but Alexander to mount him. And that is important because that shows the loyalty that Bucephalus had to Alexander. And Alexander knew that loyalty. He sensed that loyalty. And he returned that loyalty. That's the other thing. If someone or something is getting you somewhere, make sure that you are appreciative. And Alexander was also loyal to this horse. There was one point where Alexander was somewhere in modern day Iran and Bucephalus had gone missing. Now, this was a loyal horse. Alexander knew that Bucephalus hadn't run away. And Alexander put out a proclamation to the local people of that area and said in no uncertain terms that if his horse were not returned to him, he was going to kill everybody that lived in that area. And sure enough, Bucephalus was returned to Alexander very quickly after that. Now, whether Alexander just meant that as a threat, but either way, Alexander wasn't really the type of guy to make idle threats. And so Arrian says that this not only showed how much Alexander loved that horse, but also how seriously people took Alexander, how much fear he inspired from the barbarians, as he said here. And so Alexander was so devoted to that horse, Arrian says, such was Alexander's devotion to his horse. And when Bucephalus died of old age around the age of 30 over in India, Alexander had a city named for him, Alexandria Bucephala, which was founded where his horse had died. And so, you know, it must have been hard to lose that horse. And it was really not too long after that that Alexander finally succumbed to the wishes of his men and turned back and began to head home, which is going to be the subject of a future podcast. I'll talk about that, and also in reference to a similar situation with Napoleon when we're looking at some of these kind of parallel histories. And so here, Alexander, we can see, had an uncompromising devotion, not only to success, but to the vehicle of his success. And this is the kind of ferocious devotion to success that separated Alexander from other men and made Alexander a man like no other man has ever been. Because when it was time to be safe or to take a risk, to wager or hold his chips, Alexander was willing to pay the price of the horse.